janma-adyaha. Beginning with birth. Ashat, the six. Birth, existence, growth. Transformation, dwindling. And at last, death. Ime, all these. Vavaha, different conditions of the body. Drishtaha, seen. Dehasya, of the body. Na, not. Atmanaha, of the soul. Phalanam, of the fruits. Eva, life. Vrikshasya, of a tree. Kalena, in due course of time. Ishvara-murtina, whose form is the ability to transform or control the bodily activities. So translation, just as the fruits and flowers of a tree in due course of time undergo six changes, birth, existence, growth, transformation, dwindling, and then death, the material body, which is obtained by the spirit soul under different circumstances, undergoes similar changes. However, there are no such changes for the spirit soul. You can repeat, just as the fruits and flowers of a tree, in due course of time, undergo six changes. Birth, existence, growth. Transformation, dwindling. And then death. The material body, which is obtained by the spirit soul under different circumstances, undergoes similar changes. However, there are no such changes for the spirit soul. So purport by divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This is a very important verse in understanding the difference between the spiritual soul and the material body. The soul is eternal, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter, text 20. Vijayate mrite va kadachin vayam bhutva bhavita va bhuyaha ajo nitya shashvato yam purav anyate anyamane sharire. For the soul there is never birth nor death, nor having once been does he ever cease to be. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, undying, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. The spirit soul is eternal, being freed from waste and change, which takes place because of the material body. The example of a tree and its fruits and flowers is very simple and clear. A tree stands for many, many years, but with the seasonal changes, its fruits and flowers undergo six transformations. The foolish theory of modern chemists that life can be produced by chemical interactions cannot be accepted as truth. The birth of a human being's material body takes place due to a mixture of the ovum and semen. But the history of birth is that although the ovum and semen mix together after sex, there is not always pregnancy. Unless the soul enters the mixture, there is no possibility of pregnancy. But when the soul takes shelter of the mixture, the body takes birth, exists, grows, transforms, and dwindles, and ultimately is vanquished. The fruits and flowers of a tree seasonally come and go, but the tree continues to stand. Similarly, the transmigrating soul accepts various bodies which undergo six transformations, but the soul remains permanently the same. Ajo, nicho, nicha, sashvato, yam, purano, nahanyateha, nimane, sharire. The soul is eternal and ever existing, but the bodies accepted by the soul are changing. There are two kinds of soul: the supreme soul, the personality of Godhead, and the individual soul, the living entity. As various bodily changes take place in the individual soul, different millenniums of creation take place in the supreme soul. In this regard, Madhvacharya says, Shadvikara Sharirasya Navishnostad Gatasya Tod Adhinam Shariram Cha Yatvatan Mamatang Chajet. Since the body is the external feature of the soul is not dependent on the body, rather, the body is dependent on the soul. One who understands this truth should not be very much anxious about the maintenance of his body. There is no possibility of maintaining the body permanently or eternally. Antavanta ime deha nityasyokta sharirnaha. This is the statement of Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, text 18. The material body is antavat, perishable, but the soul within the body is eternal, nityasyokta sharirnaha. Lord Vishnu and the individual souls who are part and parcel of him are both eternal, nityo, nityanam, chetanash, chetananam. Lord Vishnu is the chief living being, whereas the individual living entities are parts of Lord Vishnu. All the various grades of bodies, from the gigantic universal body to the small body of an ant, are perishable. But the super soul and the soul, being equal in quality, both exist eternally. This is further explained in the next verses. Okay. Janmaja sharimevava drishtadehasya natmanaha polanamiva vrikshasya kalineshvara murtina. So omaganatam randasya gananjana shivakaya chakshur vimbinitam Yena tasmai shi garvei namaha. So, of course, this is a topic that we've heard described or discussed a multifarious many times. This is not just like a new topic for you. This is basic Krishna Conscious 101. So, but there's several subtopics that need to be addressed here, such as life comes from life. It doesn't come from matter. And then also, what do we do about this information? And then also, how do we present the information? Those three different topics are important in regard to this information that we're not the body. First of all, we talk about life comes from life. Prabhupada really emphasized this sort of preaching. In fact, he encouraged Swarup Damodar Maharaj, who was a brahmachari at that particular juncture, to go on and get his PhD so we can engage in this sort of preaching. And he was very satisfied with different books like Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science that actually proved it was impossible for life to come from matter. The scientists are very fond of saying that, you know, consciousness is an epiphenomena. That's a big word for you. You can use that to impress people. Consciousness is an epiphenomena of matter. In other words, you combine matter in a certain way and you get consciousness. And of course, there's many science fiction films that are based on this particular principle. You have androids and you have robots. I remember seeing one film that was called I, Robot many years ago. And the robots, they develop like some social skills. They like to hang out with each other. Remember that film? You don't remember. Anyway, somehow or other my memory is able to remember that more than Krishna Tata. So the robots, they actually, you know, they were hanging out in different, I guess not bars because they couldn't drink, but they were socializing with each other, and some robots were nice and some robots were evil, just like human beings. And you find this theme, and of course 2001 also, there was some consciousness exhibited by a computer. Remember 2001? Stanley Kubrick's 2001 famous film. So you find many instances of that in film. So you may think this is quite innocent, just, you know, just a movie. But actually, what you're seeing is the scientific paradigms being imprinted on people's consciousness. You know, this is propaganda. More and more, and then, you know, people are talking also about the singularity, is where computers become more intelligent than us, you know. And of course, the human beings nowadays, is probably my laptop is more intelligent than most human beings. but it doesn't have consciousness. That's the difference. So anyway, so they're talking about that life started through some accidental, in a what's called reducing atmosphere, accidental situation with different elements, and there was a spark, which happened to be lightning at that particular time, and then somehow or other, that was the first cell, and that first cell divided, and it basically evolved to become all the different species of life. I mean, that's the evolutionary theory. So, they say it happened by chance. Okay. And so, in this book, Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science, it's analyzed that for that chance occurrence to happen, not that life would be created, but that all the ingredients would come together in the proper proportions and everything like that, the possibility is basically very, very small over the whole lifetime of the universe and all the planets in the universe. You know, practically, we could say impossible. When you're talking about probability, you don't use the word impossible. Just to, in case any of you are preaching to mathematicians or scientists, you don't definitely don't want to use the word impossible, because their philosophy is that over a long enough period of time, anything can happen. You know, because they use the example that if you have a bunch of monkeys typing away at typewriters, typical example you learn in school, that after a while the whole works of Shakespeare will come out. Because Shakespeare might have been similar to a monkey, but anyway, he was a very intelligent one. So, I mean, typing randomly, not educated monkeys, like we have nowadays, but anyway, typing randomly. So, you know, that's crazy. It's absurd. I mean, the possibility of that happening. And but the possibility of one cell, which is so extremely complex. I mean, you got the mitochondria, you got all these energy things, you got the cell walls coming in. By chance, it's just not going to happen. And then so the scientists, they're trying to do it, not by chance, but by arranging things, and they haven't been able to do it, which is interesting. They said it happened by chance, but they're doing everything so-called right. You know, just the perfect situation, putting together, using their little tweezers, you know, microscopic tweezers, you know, whatever they call them, I forget, I used to know the name. But it still doesn't happen. Sometimes they claim they've created life because they take portions of things that are already alive and put them together, but that's not created life. That's a little bit different. That's Dr. Frankenstein, I presume. So, and then everybody becomes amazed. Wow, he created Dolly the sheep. You know, wasn't the name? Yeah, the first clone sheep, Dolly. She didn't live for very long. And now the people are going to have clone human beings. But they're actually just taking different things that are already alive and combining them. But everybody is just like giving them so much adulation. And Prabhupada said, the adulation that they're getting for that is similar to a man who goes on stage and barks like a dog. Like there's so many, probably, this is probably an example, is there's so many dogs barking, and nobody pays to see a dog barking. You imagine, you know, so he's $5 ticket to see my dog bark. It's probably an example. But if a man on stage has learned the art perfectly of acting like a dog, then people will pay to see him. Or if you go to see a hypnotist, you know, stage hypnotist, and you get people to bark like a dog, then people will just say, wow, isn't that far out? So that's the same thing. That Prabhupada said, people are not praising God who has created so much life, you know, just amazing things, you know, like the male and female get together and out pops a baby. You know, 9 months or whatever it is for the different species. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? That all of a sudden, like a replica comes. You know, or animals, you know, self-replicating things, you know. It's pretty amazing. And so nobody praises God, but everybody's praising these scientists who are putting together things that are already there. So anyway, so this principle, life comes from life, is a very important principle, and Prabhupada many times talked about this Darwinism, which is the root of the modern scientific, you know, paradigm that's being presented to people on TV, like I mentioned before, in the movies and everything like that, and people are just buying into it. So if you actually consider that life comes from matter, then the only alternative is, you know, might makes right, enjoy, you know, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die, or as Charvaka Muni said, beg, borrow, steal, but get yourself some ghee, and just live as long as possible. Or nowadays, of course, then you go to your health food store and you make juices and things like that so that you live longer. You know, so you can enjoy more in this life, so you can enjoy your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, and somehow or other enjoy things. However, that's not a fact that life comes from life. So anyway, so now that we understand that life comes from matter, it's not a fact. So that life comes from life, so that life that we're talking about is transcendental to matter, and that's the spirit soul that's being described here. So, therefore, what do we do about that situation? First of all, we're talking about eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. How do you enjoy in such a situation? And then Prabhupada gave a very interesting metaphor in that regard. He said the body is simply the covering of the soul. Of course, we have two coverings of the soul. There's the subtle material body as well as the gross material body. He said, gave the example of different circumstances where if you cover the senses, he was talking about the gross body, it's a metaphorical situation. If you cover the senses of the gross body, for example, you put a glove on, you can't experience so much. And Prabhupada used a sexual example, which I'm not going to use in Bhagavatam class, about naked bodies and everything like that. So, but let's say you put something over your tongue, or your tongue is coated because you're sick. Then the enjoyment that you normally get, or if you have a stuffed nose, you know, many of us have gotten the flu from time to time or had stuffed noses. The enjoyment of smelling or tasting something is just not there anymore. I mean, you just can't do it because it's covered. So if you want to enjoy even the gross body, you can't be covering your gross senses, right? So much. You have to somehow or other have them in good shape. You shouldn't be wearing gloves. You can't feel so much in the glove. You shouldn't put a glove over your tongue. Can you imagine that? You should, just like sometimes I'm walking in the forest and it's dark and I have my sunglasses on, I got to take my sunglasses off. So that's the point. The more you uncover the senses, the more the enjoyment is there. So let's say in the heavenly planets, there's more enjoyment. Why is it? Because the senses are less covered. They're not covered so much with the grosser elements, it's the subtler elements. There's more enjoyment. So the more subtle you get, the more enjoyment you get. And the grosser you get, the more miserable you become, or the more you can't enjoy. Just like you see someone who is really in the mode of ignorance, I mean, that's really covered drunk and everything like that. And they're, are they enjoying? I mean, look, go to a bar. I'm in the airport many times, and I walk by the bar. You know, airports now, somehow or other, have become places of intoxication and bars, whether you're going through immigration. Even in immigration, you know, customs. Have you seen this when you go? It's just like a giant liquor store. It's incredible. You know, even in India, it's a giant liquor store when you enter the country or leave the country. And so, and you look at the people who are drinking. Do they look happy? I mean, I was just in the airplane the other day, and the stewardess comes up to me and says, I have a surprise for you, Mr. Jacobs, because it's my material name. I said, there's a special bonus for people on your level of frequent flyer. You get to have free booze. But she didn't use the word booze. And I said, no, thank you. I said, I don't think, and she was shocked. And she said, well, I said, I'm a religious person. And then she said, well, if you bring a friend with you, they can have your free booze.
Bring a drunk.
I said, what is a religious person? I didn't say, but I was thinking, what is a religious person who doesn't drink and bring a friend who gets drunk with them? I said, thank you very much. You know, I was respectful and, you know, thankful for her offering of service. But I said, no, thank you. So anyways.
She could offer a seat in first class.
Yeah, it was in first class, because I get upgraded for free. So, but there's nothing. Anyway, so she was very nice to me. So this is the point. We really want to enjoy. You know, it's like we hear from Nectar of Devotion that immediately devotional service is relief from all distress, it's enjoyment, it's auspicious, you know, like that. So if we really want to enjoy, that's the way. You know, through the soul. And then another point is the material, the enjoyment, even the material enjoyment of the gross body is very temporary, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described it as something like the dunking stool punishment that people used to use when they punish a criminal. You know, they put them in a painful situation, drowning or, you know, underwater. And then when they raised them up, he was breathing, and he was thinking, this is nectar to be able to breathe. So it's like that, you know, Krishna put, like sex desire, for example. It's, you know, so intense. Oh my God, what am I going to do? And then somehow or other you get to enjoy it and think, wow, that's relief. But then the next day, I mean, if it was actually enjoyment, it would stay with you. But then you just have to keep, it's like a drug. Any of these things are like drugs. You just got to increase your dosage all the time. What's eating, you know, it's the same food every day, you know, been there, seen it, done it, the same quinoa, like that. And then, where's the variety? You know, Prabhupada did say, variety is the mother of enjoyment. It is true. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. But really, the variety we're looking for is the spiritual variety. Whereas the personalists, they think the spirituality or the spiritual realm is without variety. So that's pretty boring. So therefore, we understand, according to the Bhagavatam, Aruyika Trena Parampada, that when they go up, they get bored. Hey, no variety. I mean, when they first go there, they think, you know, I can't think, this is no brain. But anyway, I guess it's just Brahman, Haribo, Nitai Gauranga, Haribo, Brahman. So when they first go, they experience, you know, a relief. But then after a while, hey, what am I going to do? And then the Rupa Jaina Parampada, Dajido, Yushmad Angrayaha, as the Bhagavatam describes, again, they fall down because there's no variety there. So there is spirit. There's so much spiritual variety. Like last night we were talking about all the different verses in the Vedic literatures, and it's great. I didn't go into the descriptions of Krishna's pastimes, this ultimate infinite variety in Krishna's pastime. So that's real enjoyment. That's where we got to squeeze our juice from. Interesting expression. That's where we got to get our juice from, is that enjoyment of Krishna's pastimes. You know, that's where the juice comes from. Yeah, we understand we're not the body. That's a little juicy. I mean, it's a relief. But that's not all. You know, to understand what you're not is not really sufficient, or even just theoretically to understand you're the soul. But what does the soul do besides chant Hare Krishna? I mean, what does the soul do in this spiritual world? And this is so wonderful that we're given this information, and then we can actually enjoy as a result of that. Okay, so that's the second point. The third point I said we're going to talk about is how do we present this information to people who really don't have that much faith? You know, we start talking, you know, there's a spiritual world. Hey, you know, we heard that before. The Mormons say, you know, you go, you get a chance to be in charge of your universe, which is misery anyway, as we mentioned the other day in class, to manage a whole universe. You know, I'd rather go to the Brahman. So, the Muslims, they say you get to go to the heaven, and there's all these celestial virgins who are nagging you all the time, you know. Can you imagine, you know? Can you imagine, like, you know, 100, you know, I mean, you go there, it's very nice, you get the appreciation, oh, we love you, Maharaj or whatever. But, you know, long term, and I mean, they're all demanding things, they all want jewelry and things like that. You know, it's going to be a painful situation. If you actually think about it, you know, you extrapolate on that, you know, all right, so all those celestial virgins, they greet you. But what do you do, you know, after the first few hours with them? And then, you know, pretty nasty situation. And then the Christians, probably no conception of heaven, you know, just like, you go there, the pearly gates, and, you know, there's McDonald's there and whatever. Imagine. I mean, of course, originally in Christianity, you know, the lion lays down with the lamb, as Jesus Christ said. You know, it's a peaceful place. But God's sitting there on his throne, and it's a pretty boring place, too. So how do you convince people, you know, because everyone has these conceptions, they say, well, that's just your belief that you're not the body. So how do you convince people they're not the body, first of all? And actually, Prabhupada gave us many ways or many some metaphors or explanations to convince people they're not the body. And one is the bird in the cage stuff. You know, the bird in the cage example, he said, if there's a bird in the cage and someone's taking care of the cage and not taking, you know, polishing the cage and not taking care of the bird, and the bird dies. So that's one metaphor Prabhupada gave us. That the soul, of course, is like the bird in the cage is like the body, and people just engage in taking care of the body, polishing the body, trying to give the body enjoyment, but we're not like that. Another example Prabhupada gave. And actually, some of these were plays that we used to put on during the Sunday feasts. I don't know if any of you remember that, but in the early days, in many cases, there were puppet shows and plays. Even here in Ugaloka, many years ago, we had puppet shows during the Sunday feasts. So another play, of course, the bird in the cage was a play. Another play was the coat of the drowning man example. You know, there was a man who was swimming somewhere or other, fell in the river, and he was drowning, and he said, save me, save me, save me. And the lifeguard came up to him and took his, of course, why was he wearing a coat in the water? But anyway, that's another situation. But he fell off the boat, rather than be swimming. You know, obviously, if he's swimming, he wouldn't be swimming with a coat. So the lifeguard comes up and grabs his coat and says, I've saved you. So obviously he hasn't saved him. And so many, many stories like that. Another, this is not a metaphor, but another explanation Prabhupada gave about how or what the body is destined for is Prabhupada talked about different cultures, how they deal with the body. And Prabhupada specifically talked about the Parsis in India. He said, well, the Parsis, what they do, and this is really to help you understand the nature of the body and that the body is temporary. He says the Parsis, they take the body and throw it off a tower and then watch as the vultures eat it. Whew. I mean, that's pretty much strikes you. You know, wow, this thing that I'm so attached to. And Prabhupada said, you know, food for the vultures. And then Prabhupada said, if you're buried in the ground, you're food for the worms. And if you're cremated, you become ashes. So Prabhupada used all these explanations. Of course, devotees came up with other explanations that were probably a little too gross, like bags of pus, fuel, bile, mucus, and stuff like that. Prabhupada never used that example. Prabhupada said the body is tridhana, okay, bile, mucus, and pus, but he never used the example of the bag and everyone squeezing the bag and kissing the bag like devotees. Prabhupada wasn't that gross, like us Americans are. So, there's different ways to explain it because it's very important. That's Krishna consciousness ABC before you get on to, you know, XYZ or DEF or something like that. That it's important for people to understand what they're not. And then you can explain to people what they are. All right, you're not the body. And that if you just say they're not the body, that's actually very depressing. Like we were talking about last night with Albert Schweitzer, isn't it? I mentioned him last night. He said, you know, your life-negating, world-negating philosophy is the Vedic philosophy. Well, there's an aspect to it that we're material life-negating, material world-negating, but we're presenting something positive. And so that positive thing is an eternal relationship, loving relationship with God. And that's a relief. That's a relief. Otherwise, life is filled with anxiety. So anyway, so these are some of the things that I get from this verse. Life comes from life, first of all, and then the second point is, you know, the material, the enjoyment comes from spirituality, and the third point is how to present this to people, because it's very important. We're a preaching movement. If you want to understand you're not the body and who you are, the way to do it is to preach it. You preach, you master, you practice. You know, practice should be there too. As we were mentioning yesterday, the verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Apani Achari, that one must first practice in order to preach. And but we should try to help people understand this, because otherwise, under this concept that we are the body, the world is actually going to hell. I mean, people are actually destined for lower births. So any questions or comments? Yes. Yeah.
The comments about how to preach that we're not blind.
Yeah.
And so something I can say is, like, here you have a dog that is alive, and here you have next to it a dog that's dead, there's a difference. Or even more so, something that kind of catch the person who's listening is, have you ever seen somebody dead? So what's the difference between your grandmother when she was alive a couple of hours ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. The question is, it's interesting that Prabhupada talks about the six
changes.
Items. Yeah. And he says existence in the translation.
Yeah.
And also in the purport. First he says birth, and then he says existence. It seems to be obvious that when you're born, you exist. Why is this? Why is this?
Well, the actual thing is maintenance. That is translated or explained as maintenance. Like the body is born and maintains. You know, that's the maintenance function. Just like you have in the universe, you know, Lord Vishnu is in charge of maintenance. And then there's, and of course, then byproducts, and then dwindling and death.
Yeah, it seems to be like.
But generally, existence, I would explain existence as maintenance, the maintenance phase. So, any other questions?
Well, one of the interesting things is that the concept of life coming from life is even more complex than just the cell, because you have to talk about the whole creation of the universe and everything else. And I was listening to one scientist was being interviewed on NPR, and this scientist said she didn't want to say there had to be God. She said that there's so many things that have to be put in order for life to actually happen. There has to be a conspiracy of some sort, because it can't. Her understanding was it couldn't possibly happen.
No, it's impossible. I mean, that these things called the universal constants. I'm not going to explain what that is. If any of them were any different, a little bit different,
nothing would happen.
Nothing would happen. Not only life, but things wouldn't happen in the universe.
There has to be some deep kind of